Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining the press conference to provide a brief update on the electric grid conditions. This is Christina Osborne with California ISO Stakeholder Affairs. I'll be facilitating the meeting. And here to provide the update from the ISO is Elliot Mainzer, President and CEO, and Mark Rossiter, Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. This is a verbal update only. However, we are recording the event and will post the video file on the news page on our public website as soon as it's available. After we provide the update, there will be an opportunity for members of the media to ask questions. You can raise your hand by pressing #2. As a reminder, please start by identifying yourself, including your name and affiliation. Please try and be brief so that we have time to address as many questions as we can within the time allotted for this event. With that, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Elliot Mainzer.
Thank you, Christina. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much for taking some time here on a Saturday afternoon to join this video conference call. I appreciate the opportunity to give you a heads up on exactly what's going on at the moment and heading into what's going to be a very stressed evening on the grid. So I think as many of you know, our Flex Alert took effect just at 4 p.m., and we're urging everyone in California to do everything they can do tonight to reduce their electricity use from now until 9 p.m. so we don't have to rely on rotating outages to stabilize our grid. The intense heat waves that we've been experiencing in California and throughout the West would strain, I think, just about any electric grid, and I really appreciate the work of our system operators and the many utility folks across the state for the job that they've been doing to keep everything stable. But the fast-moving bootleg fire in southern Oregon is now something really beyond our control in California, and we're facing a serious situation here on the grid this evening. The fire has threatened the California-Oregon intertie, which is the high-voltage transmission line that sends imported power to California from the Pacific Northwest. And California's been using this imported energy for many years. But because of the fire, which has nearly doubled in size in each of the past 2 days, three of the lines feeding into the intertie in Oregon were tripped and went out of service. An associated DC line, which feeds into Southern California, was also reduced in its capacity. And collectively, between these two lines, California has lost about 5,500 megawatts of power. That is a significant fraction of the state's power supply. And so even though the lines did come back into service briefly earlier today, before going out again, we simply are not going to be able to rely on them during these extreme conditions this evening. So we really do need everyone's help to reduce demand and maintain electric reliability this evening. The ISO, I think I want to really emphasize, you know, we're asking a lot of consumers, but we want to make sure that everybody knows that we really have been using every tool at our disposal to try to keep the lights on. And the people of California really are an indispensable partner in these efforts. And I know we're asking a lot of folks, but I really have been impressed to see people who respond whenever they've been asked to conserve. Back on June 17th and 18th, first Flex Alert of the season, even before summer started, really appreciate the efforts. And last night, folks leaning in across the state to help us work through stress grid conditions. So, you know, I think when you step back, I think many of us are really recognizing now that the climate change and these extreme heat waves happening in the earlier parts of the summer now have forced all of us to do things that we really never imagined just a few years ago. But we've entered this new normal, and now it's really going to take all of us doing our part during this important clean energy transition to keep the lights on. So before Mark and I take any of your questions, I just want to, again, just reiterate the key elements of energy conservation that we're going to need tonight. This is a very stress grid condition this evening, and we really need folks to provide this conservation for the system. And so we are asking folks really keep those thermostats at 78 degrees or higher, if health permits. Avoid using major appliances from now until 9 p.m. and turn off any unnecessary lights. Business and industry are being asked to do their part, and if we all step up and take just a few simple steps, you know, we won't have to use the last resort of rotating outages to balance the grid and keep it stable. Before I take your questions, I just want to also, I've been watching very carefully here the last few days the media coverage of this, and I wanted to let you all know I really deeply appreciate the work that many of you are doing in your communities, through your papers, through your stations, to get these messages out. It's an important partnership. You know, this is a situation we all recognize in the California reliability sector that we have a lot of hard work to do in the days, months, and years ahead to continue to put capacity on the system so that these types of grid conditions aren't so stressful. But during this transition period, we do need the help, and tonight is a moment where everyone in California is going to have to play their part in avoiding any further disturbances to the system. So I'll stop there, and Mark Rothleder, our Chief Operating Officer, and I are both now available for your questions. Thank you very much.
So if you have a question, you can press pound 2 to raise your hand. Please start by identifying yourself and also try and be brief so that we can address as many questions as we can. And Roy, let me know if anybody enters the queue, please.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to our first person in the queue. Caller, please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Lynn Duan over at Bloomberg News. A few questions here. One, is there any estimated time of return to service for these power lines that would restore the 5,500 megawatts that was lost?
You know, the very latest information that I saw earlier today was an estimate of maybe Sunday at midnight, but honestly, we just don't know. That fire in Oregon is spreading rapidly. Its trajectory is unpredictable. And at this point, we have to be assuming that for the next few days that we're going to be operating without it. Mark, have you had any further updates? Or that's the best information that's hit my screen at this point.
Oh, that's correct.
Okay, and then a few others. How thin, then, are you expecting margins to be today as a result of not having this import capacity and what we have on the grid right now?
Mark, why don't you provide the very latest out of dispatch in terms of margins for this evening?
Yeah, so we're expecting to have margins that are within our operating reserve requirements, which will be we won't be able to maintain potentially our approximately 3,000 megawatts of operating reserve. And as a result of that, we're concerned about having sufficient capacity to meet those margins. So we're expecting that we may need to be prepared to arm load, but we're not. It's unsure whether we'd have to actually interrupt any load. We're trying to maintain our reserves as much as possible.
Yeah, and I think
just to clarify what you were saying, first you said we're expecting to have margins within our operating requirements, but then you said we may not have the 3,000 that we need for operating reserve. What does that mean? Does that mean we're hoping to have the right amount of reserve, or we're not sure that we will?
We're expecting that it'll be difficult to maintain the 3,000 megawatts
okay.
of operating reserve.
Got it. All right.
And at this time, are
you forcing curtailments?
No, we are not forcing curtailments at this point, but we will be prepared if we need to.
Yeah. And I just wanted to emphasize that, you know, recognizing that we will be stressing our operating reserves, this is why that customer conservation of bending that demand curve here from 4 to 9 is so critical in avoiding that. Go ahead.
Sorry, please go ahead.
Sorry, we received a notice from some market participants yesterday evening that said that the Western Reliability Coordinator had declared a stage 3 emergency. Does that mean that CAISO declared a stage 3 emergency? And if so, why wasn't it made public anywhere? Because we only saw stage 2 that had been declared, and that was from a market notice that we happened to catch.
The confusing part is there's actually stage 2 emergency is what occurred. That is equivalent to an emergency, NERC emergency alert of EEA3. So that's the that's why we were in the EEA3 from a NERC perspective, but we're in a stage 2 from an ISO perspective.
Yeah, it's a fair question. We are in the process of transitioning away from a separate alerts and warnings system that we've been using at the ISO for a number of years and moving more towards the standard definitions. But we're still at this point in that transition using our own definitions. And so we did not move into load shed last evening. And so that's the distinction. Over the course of the coming months, we'll be better harmonizing those things and we'll avoid any confusion on that front.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to our next caller. Please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hello, this is Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez with KQED News. You're mentioning the lines feeding in the inner tie in Oregon, and you mentioned Southern California. I was wondering if you could speak a little more with specificity about where the other lines supply power to in California.
For sure. Mark, why don't you take us through the topology of the COI and the DC just to differentiate those for the questioner?
So the California-Oregon intertie, which is what we call the alternating current or the AC intertie, really brings energy in between Southern Oregon and Northern California. Is the first point of interconnection into the California ISO. And that's the lines on in Southern Oregon that are affecting that intertie, the Pacific or the California-Oregon intertie. The Pacific DC intertie comes in from roughly Central Oregon and drops in directly into Southern California near Sealmar. While the Pacific DC line is not out of service in any way, the power carrying capability has been decreased because of the interplay of the lines that are affected by the fire. So that's why the Pacific DC is affected, but not the line is still in service.
Great, thank you. And just really briefly, I'm sorry to make you repeat it, but can you say the number of the megawattage that is out power loss at this point? You said it once, and I, to be honest, I didn't quite catch it.
Yeah, so from a total California perspective, because the lines are shared and provide capability to more than just the California ISO, it's about 5,500 megawatts of import capability that is reduced as a result of the fires and the combination effects on the AC, the COI and the Pacific DC intertie. Of that, about 3,300 to 4,000 megawatts affects the California ISO.
Got it. Thank you for the specificity.
Okay.
Helped a lot.
Yeah, and thanks for the question, because obviously, although we have primary jurisdiction over our balancing authority, about 80% of the state, very important to us to keep a close eye on how our neighbors and our partners are doing, and also, quite frankly, keeping close tabs with our partners in other states. All of us are part of the Connected Western Interconnection, and we need to make sure that all of us are being taken care of in terms of reliability. So thanks for the question.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to our next caller. Please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hey, guys. Sammy from the LA Times. I was just hoping you could talk a little bit about what your conversations have been like with other balancing authorities, particularly BPA and Transmission Authority of Northern California. And I guess what I'm curious here as well is how your role is the balancing authority for California and your role with the wider region as the reliability coordinator, how those things interplay here.
Yeah. Mark, you've been having the direct conversations with BPA the last couple of days. Why don't you talk about how those have been going and then with some of the other entities inside the state?
Sure. So we have direct conversations with BPA. They are the what we'll call the path operator north of the intertie. We are the path operator south of the intertie. And we are in close coordination with them to make sure that we're aware kind of when those lines are coming back, if those lines are at risk, they have been keeping us informed, including the fact that the lines were at risk when the fire started to take off yesterday. In terms of our reliability coordinator role, yes, we are the reliability coordinator, and several balancing areas that were affected yesterday were also in energy emergency alerts because they were also affected by the loss of scheduling capability or energy coming through those intertie points. And so we, as reliability coordinator, we're closely monitoring the situation for them, monitoring how they're able to maintain reserves, and indicating whether they are in an energy emergency alert or not and what level of energy emergency alert they are in. You also mentioned the Transmission Authority of Northern California. That is, there are kind of three lines on the intertie on the south, and one of those lines is the California-Oregon Transmission Project operated under TANK or owned by TANK, and they are about one-third of the transfer capability serving their customers and their owners of the of that capability. We are the path operator, and so when there's a D-rate like there is right now to the California-Oregon intertie, that D-rate is shared amongst all the owners of the total California-Oregon intertie, including the Transmission Authority Northern California.
And I'll just mention very briefly for those of you that aren't maybe super familiar with the ARC, with the reliability coordinator function. In addition to operating the energy market and operating the high voltage transmission system for 80% of California, we do administer what's known as a reliability coordinator function, which is essentially, think of it as sort of a control tower operator function for the broad, a significant fraction of the broader Western United States, where we take a very high level view into flows across the aggregate transmission system and monitor conditions of the individual utilities. So it's a much wider area function than just the functions that we have in the state of California.
Yeah. One quick follow-up. I know you said that the DC line is a little bit affected as well, but I'm curious if the big problem is the AC line and that's serving PG&E and TANK, is there any scenario where you'd call rolling outages just for the PG&E service territory, or would you do it for everyone?
No, this is a system-wide problem.
Okay. Next.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to our next caller. Caller, please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Emma Goss of KTVU. I just wanted to know if for one thing, is a weekend heat wave even more straining on the power grid because more people are home? Do weekends tend to see a bigger strain than weekdays? And you mentioned that businesses were also being asked to conserve during the 4 to 9 p.m. period. In what ways are you asking businesses to conserve?
Yeah, Mark, take that. The load pattern on the weekends.
Yeah, so the load pattern on the weekend, generally speaking, is a little bit lower than the weekday periods. And so that's because people are not in the office. There's a little bit less office commercial air conditioner load. But when you get to these high temperature levels, there are anomalies that we can have high load periods, extreme high load periods, even on the weekends. And in fact, last year I think our highest load day, if it wasn't the highest load day, was actually Labor Day or very much near Labor Day, which was a Sunday. So, or Monday rather. So, the point is that the I'm sorry. What was the second question? Sorry.
Businesses.
Yeah. So the businesses can also be asked to raise their temperature. Obviously, it has to be cognizant of. If it's a supermarket, you have to be you're not going to be able to raise temperatures of that affect the groceries. But the reducing the lighting load in some cases and doing things like that help reduce the load between that 4 and 9 p.m. period.
There are also other official demand response programs inside of California that involve larger industrial and commercial customers that are being triggered. We used those last night, likely to use those again this evening. These are folks that sign up well in advance for these programs. They have an agreement to be dispatched off the system if necessary. And so that is we are currently in a status where we're very likely to use those tools this evening as well.
Okay, we'll go ahead.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and move on to our next caller. Please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Leah Pizzetti with KGTV in San Diego. I just have a question about, like, yesterday we had our first Flex Alert, how do people do? I don't know if you have any metrics on like a normal energy usage day versus when you ask people to preserve and conserve. I mean, are people doing a good enough job these days, or do you have a push for more? I'm sure there's always room for more.
We're going to need more. Mark and I spent a good portion of this morning looking back at the graphics last night and trying to discern the impacts. And I think there was some level of measurable response. We don't have a hard number for it yet. But honestly, I think that we are going to need more response than we saw last night. I think this is a program that's going to continue to mature as the messages get out and as we, you know, bring other elements to it. But right now, I think this evening, particularly as we get into the heart of that time, as the sun is really setting and loads are still really high, we're asking folks to work even harder than we saw back in June and even last night.
And we are encouraging people to directly sign up for the Flex Alerts directly so that they can be aware and be directly responsive when these Flex Alerts do occur.
We do recognize, I will add, look, we understand that, you know, especially when it's really hot, for some people it's extraordinarily difficult just to sort of, you know, even if their health is an issue, to be raising their thermostats. But if you can do it, you can handle it, raising that thermostat. But probably equally importantly, there are steps that folks can take, you know, in advance of the Flex Alert period to cool their homes, use those bigger appliances in the early afternoon, kind of shift those loads in the earlier part of the day, and try to be able to ride it out for those few hours in the evening as comfortably as possible. So now, of course, it's now, you know, almost 4:30 in the evening. We're well into the window. It's too late for that today. But, you know, assuming, you know, we have other events like this over the summer, that the actions in advance of the Flex Alert period can make riding through it as, you know, as comfortable as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to our next caller. Please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Lily Jamali from KQED. I'm wondering, I wanted to ask a question about FERC's recent approval of your proposed tariff change on interstate power sharing. So basically other states like Arizona, for example, using our lines to receive power. I'm not sure if that's a moot point given what's going on with the California-Oregon intertie, but I was wondering if FERC's approval, which, you know, just came through a couple of weeks ago, gives you any added flexibility given what is going on right now, because I think this is the first heat wave since they approved it.
Well, bottom line, I think, to your question, Lily, under these conditions, I don't think it does give us any additional flexibility than we sort of secured through the agreement itself. Right now, of course, with those interties being curtailed the way they are, all of us who are dependent on imports from the Pacific Northwest are having to look for alternative sources of supply and using different tools. So no, I don't think that that's a big variable in terms of what's happening today. And as we've said before, you know, for all of our partners in Arizona and New Mexico and Nevada, you know, these are important utility partners to us as well. And so we will continue to be working with them in the weeks and months ahead to continue to look for ways that we can all meet the reliability needs of our service territories. So I don't think it's a big variable at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And if that intertie were up and running, do you think it would have changed the equation for today and this weekend?
Meaning I don't think so. I think that, no, I mean, we haven't had to curtail yet any firm load. We have been able to allow those utilities to meet their highest priority exports while meeting the needs of the state of California. And I think that we got to a good place for the summer. And as you know, we'll be working on a longer term solution to that beginning here just this week. So I think that the rules were nice and clarified for the summer, and fortunately, as of yesterday, we haven't had to curtail any firm load.
Can I just clarify the answer to that? Because I think you're asking whether I think your question was, if the California intertie was fully available, would we be in the conditions that we are today? And I think the answer is no. If the California intertie was fully available and not affected by the fires, I don't think we would be under these extreme conditions and asking for the amount of relief that we are. If the question was, if the intertie was up, would we have needed or used the new functionality or new rules that FERC approved, I think the answer is also not at that point, because we wouldn't be under such stress conditions with the intertie fully up.
That's right. Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on to our next caller. Please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hi. So just four follow-up questions, and I'm just going to round them off here to get them off my plate. We heard Nevada was also facing an emergency situation last night. You talked about your responsibility as a reliability coordinator. Can you tell us exactly what other parts of SETA California were facing emergency levels and what parts are today, aside from California? And then three others, you've spoken a lot about the importance of demand reductions. What's been done on the supply side? What generating plants within California have been brought into service? And that is, do we not have realistically enough to bring online in the state to do this without demand response? And then, sorry, just a third one. This is the second time CAISO has had to call for conservation, and we're only halfway through July. What does this say about the rest of the summer and the possibility of wildfires threatening power assets and really just the overall state of California's reliability?
Well, I'll take the last question and let Mark handle the questions about which other balancing authorities may have been under distress and what are the steps we've been taking to sort of firm up the supply side. Bottom line is, look, we took everything we learned from last summer, and I know that the California Energy Commission, the California Public Utilities Commission, the ISO sort of refreshed their analytics, and I think we still came into this summer thinking that our issues were primarily going to be associated with August and September. And we had the first major westwide heat wave in 4 days before the official beginning of summer on the 17th and 18th of June. And if you look broadly at the heat and the drought conditions and its impact on hydroelectricity, the fact that some of our resources get stressed under the extreme heat and just the general uncertainty around how these patterns can play out, this is why we've been really raising the awareness of the potential need for customer conservation and, quite frankly, anticipating what could be very long and hot summer. So we're really leaning in across all these different dimensions. Mark, why don't you talk about who else was stressed yesterday and some of the other steps that we've taken just in the last couple of weeks to try to further firm up supplies?
Yeah, I believe yesterday during the events and the high-load events without the California intertie, I believe in addition to Nevada, but I believe also balancing area in Northern California was also in an alert, and there may have been one other, potentially, I think, Turlock, but I have to double-check that and confirm that. With regards to the available resources, we really had all the available resources on that we could yesterday evening, and we still needed the demand response and conservation to get through the evening hours. So we had all available resources. Doesn't mean that there weren't some resources that were not available, but we had all available resources online at the time.
Sorry, just to clarify, so you said balancing area of Northern California, Nevada, and possibly one other area of Western U.S. Under emergency alert?
Us, California ISO, and then I believe, but we have to confirm this, I thought I remember Turlock Irrigation District, but we have to double check that.
We will follow up with you on the Turlock question. Yeah, and I'm just going to offer one other piece of context. So I think this is an important question. I think that we've been spending a good piece of the weekend here already, communicating with state agencies and the California Public Utilities Commission, the CEC, and just watching this latest pattern. And now, of course, the fires impacting things. I think all of us recognize. I think it was demonstrated a couple of weeks ago by the CPUC that California has a significant amount of additional capacity that it's going to have to put in the system here in the years ahead to adapt to these changing patterns of load and temperatures and heat and even the potential for extended drought. So, all of us our goal, of course, is to try to restore that margin for error, that reserve margin in the system, and to get away from the edge where we are right now. But it will take some time. And during that transition, this is where the customer conservation and business conservation really become a very, very important variable in maintaining overall system reliability.
All right.
Ryan?
We'll go ahead.
Yeah. Great. Go ahead. Thanks.
All right. We'll go ahead and move on to our next caller. Please go ahead. Your line is unmuted.
Hi, Mark. Elliot, this is Hudson Sandler from RTO Insider. I was wondering if you could just explain a little bit more about how the DC intertie is being affected. I saw on the BPA's OASIS site that the north to south part of it had been derated to 1,500 megawatts and that the south to north portion was down to zero. If you have any insight on why that might be and how the interplay with the AC line works, that would be great.
Yeah, Mark, you've been dealing with that for years. Why don't you talk about how those two things play off of each other?
Yeah, so the interplay is that you always have to be prepared for a contingency, and if there is a loss of the DC line, the energy will flow over the AC system, at least until such time resources are back down in the north and or load reduced in the south where it's being received. And so with the AC lines significantly reduced because of the three lines out of service because of the fire, they will perform studies and they will have protocols and procedures that will reduce the amount that they can transfer on the DC line because, again, they have to be prepared for the loss of the DC line and where that energy will redistribute if the DC line trips. And so it's basically preparing for the next contingency event and being secure.
Okay, great. And then this might seem like an obvious question, but how – so we understood that the fire – Bonneville said the fire's in the AC pathway. How does that specifically result in the line being derated like it has?
Well, the issue is that smoke will cause the lines to basically arc or trip or relay because of the thick smoke. And they will also take – I'm not saying that this is the case right now, but they will also potentially take preventive measures and take the lines out of service because if a fire travels through the corridor of the line, it will either trip or they need to have clearance to fight the fire. In this case, we saw the lines trip when the thick smoke went through the lines.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we have no further questions at this time.
Okay. Well, I'll just close by thanking you guys for staying in touch with us. We will continue to make ourselves available here in the days ahead to answer questions. You know, for me, just extremely important that we stay communicative and try to provide you just with the very best objective and intellectually honest information we possibly can about the grid conditions. And thanks again for your efforts to help get these messages out. Tonight's going to be a critical moment for our grid, and I think if we can get Californians to continue to lead in and step up like they've done before, I think it's going to make a big difference. So thank you very much, and all the best to you.
Thanks, Elliot. And just a reminder, if you have any follow-up questions, send those, if you're a member of the media, send those to isomedia@caiso.com. And also for additional information on the media briefings, also the Flex Alert program, you can go to the news page on ISO's website. That's located under the About Us tab. So thank you all very much for joining us. We appreciate the questions and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for using Event Services. You may now disconnect.